Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at openhousecommunity.com.au.
This past week saw the passing of one of the giants of evangelical Christian faith, John Stott, at the age of 90. His influence from his church, All Souls at Langham Place in London, was deep and it was wide and profound within the Christian arena and far beyond, in fact on the world stage. He had a great passion for ministry, for preaching, and especially engaging people with the big questions of life and faith, influencing generations of Christian people and also spectators to the Christian faith. He was a prolific author and also a dedicated and delighted birdwatcher. Former Anglican Bishop Paul Barnett knew John Stott well over many, many years and last saw him a year before he died. And Paul Barnett joins us tonight on Open House. Paul, welcome.
Thank you very much, Lee. It's very good to be with you.
It's terrific to have you here. Paul, can you give us a sketch of the extent of John Stott's influence, both inside and outside the church?
Well, the secular media in the US summed up John Stott, I think, very well, and they brought a perspective to his life and activity that I think those within the Christian circle perhaps didn't quite appreciate. For example, New York Times said that if Protestants were to have a pope, it would be John Stott. And that was said, you know, in America, where Americans are very conscious of being Americans, but they thought that really some of their very famous names as church leaders really didn't compare with the eminence and influence of John Stott. And I understand that Time magazine rated him as one of the most 100 influential people in the world. So those perspectives from people from highly respected media sources outside the church,
yes,
I think represent a very interesting perspective on Mr. Stott that those who were perhaps closer to him didn't quite appreciate.
Paul, if you're able to identify what that influence was, how would you stand back and say, this is how John Stott changed Christian ministry, changed people, changed the way Christian faith is viewed in the world?
Well, I think that after World War One, what we might call mainstream Protestant Christianity took a terrific hit. The horrors of World War One, I think, shook the confidence of many people. And World War II, of course, came very soon after the end of World War One, and once again, I think the confidence of many people in the God of the Bible was greatly shaken by the the events of World War One, the Great Depression, and then World War II, so that the stocks of mainstream Christianity were, in the Protestant circle at least, were really quite low at the end of World War II. And it was out of that period that John Stott, as quite a young man, really emerged as a leader who gave huge hope, I think, to Christian people around the world in terms of his scholarship, his remarkable intellect, which he didn't parade, but which was there. I mean, I think he won a double first in modern languages at Cambridge, apart from his theological qualifications. He could have gone on and become, you know, an ambassador. I saw him at close quarters being interviewed by media in Adelaide, and I thought to myself, gee, this man could have become Prime Minister of Great Britain. He could have. There's no public position that he could not conceivably have fulfilled. So incredibly able was he, with a remarkable memory and the ability to say things politely, courageously, but quite briefly.
How good that he channeled all that where he was in the end. He was also a very prolific author. I think he wrote about 50 books, and many of them very, very influential on the lives of so many people.
Yes, I should say that some of them have become and will be regarded as classics in Christian, which I think basic Christianity would be in that class.
Yes.
I think in many ways the mantle of C.S. Lewis, who was, of course, a layman, an academic and layman, not a clergyman. Yeah. Notwithstanding those differences, I think the mantle of Lewis in many ways fell on Stott. And for many people, not least in the United States, I think John's integrity, his sense of involvement in the what we might call the real world of people's daily lives, as well as in the theoretical and sometimes abstract natures of theology, he brought those two worlds together in a very rational, very ethical, impressive way. And so his genius, I think, spanned the Atlantic from Great Britain to the United States in a remarkable way.
Paul, as you've seen him close up over a number of decades,
yes.
What would you say were the characteristics of the man, or the character of the man, the mind of him, which made him so distinct and such a significant figure, personally?
Well, I think he was a man of considerable intellectual ability, which was shown, however, in his ability to analyse things very carefully and then to express them simply. For example, as a preacher, he was probably without peer in the world in terms of his discipline, his brevity. He wasn't long-winded. He seldom went from beyond 25 minutes, I would think, in the sermons that I heard. He was gifted with a great speaking voice, which wasn't flowery or pretentious, but yet it was a delight to listen to. And he was very disciplined and very accessible. And I think he had the ability to make you feel that you trusted what he had to say. And so he just had this incredible impact, I think, wherever he went.
And for all his gifts, a very humble man.
Humble man, very humble. Disparaging, really, of himself. He was intolerant. He was impatient of any kind of congratulations to him. He lived almost all, if not all, the income he received from his publication was channeled to third world assistance. When he travelled and stayed with us, as he did on a number of occasions, there were no clothes in his suitcase to speak of. However, his suitcases tended to be packed with medicines that he would be taking on from Australia to go to some country in the world like Myanmar, former Burma,
yes.
Which was so desperately short of such medications. And that was the kind of man he was. He lived a Spartan, very basic life. I suspect he had only a few pairs of shoes and few bits and pieces of clothing. His only, what we might call, indulgence, of course, was his famous bird watching.
Yes,
he was a scholar of those. But in a sense, that was also an expression of his love of God and love of the Creator's creation, if I can put it like that.
He had quite a passion for the environment.
Indeed, he was. And I think it was that sense of balance that, on the one hand, he was deeply committed to redemption in Christ, and yet he was at the same time deeply committed to the work of the Creator and of humanity. And in that regard, he was a genuine humanitarian, in that he was continually pleading the cause of the poor and the needy in the world, and he travelled incessantly in third world, in developing countries, not only taking medicines, but speaking to people, raising up leaders and stuff like that.
Paul, you mentioned his preaching, and it was a particular passion for him.
Yes.
I think he wrote two significant books, which I've both read. I teach a unit of a preaching course myself, and it's full of John Stott quotes. He had a real passion that the Christian faith be communicated well to those outside the faith.
Yes. And indeed it did. I remember Sir Mark Oliphant attended a service in Adelaide, which I invited him to attend. He was, of course, a well-known agnostic.
And the former South Australian governor.
Former South Australian governor, and, of course, pioneer of Australian National University science work, and, of course, one of the people involved in the development of the nuclear bomb.
Yes.
And, you know, a very eminent Australian, and not at all... Not at all a any interest in Christianity, and yet he was absolutely bowled over by Stott when he heard him in Adelaide.
Stott had a great combination, from a distance, I observe, of head and heart.
Yes.
So the brilliant mind about which you've spoken, but also a soft and compassionate heart.
Yes.
And a loving heart for people.
Yes. And in his own way, although a bachelor, and you might say perhaps a little shy of children, the three times he stayed with us in Adelaide when our children were quite small, he loved them and they loved him. Mm. And when he came, it was just a barrel of laughs, as it were.
Good stuff.
And, you know, he fooled around with them in ways that indicated a great love of children. And he was just an absolutely delightful man, very humble man, but just a very delightful man.
What a privilege for you and your kids.
Yes, absolutely. They still think of him as Uncle John, and he's known affectionately around the world as Uncle John. You say Uncle John, and
yep.
There'll be thousands of people in the world who know immediately who you're talking about.
Yes. His reach extended very much to the poor and needy in continents like Africa.
Yes. Yes, indeed. Indeed, and he wrote extensively on social issues facing Christians, facing thinking people in the world today, and he raised up other people interested in that sort of thing as well. So his legacy very much continues in the world.
Paul, tell us something of your contact with him about a year ago before he died.
He'd been staying for some time in a place for retired clergy in the south of England, and his secretary, his longtime secretary, Francis Whitehead, would travel down from London once a week with correspondence to be read and returned. And that continued till the very end of his life. She worked with him as his secretary for all those years.
Wow. So
we made an arrangement with Francis Whitehead. Would it be possible to call on Mr. Stott? I was in England at the time. And so an arrangement was made that I would call on him. He was not at all well at the time. In fact, he was confined to bed. But we had a lovely hour together. And we prayed together and we read the Bible together. And I gave him such news as he wanted to hear, because he had many, many friends in Sydney, the late Archbishop Lone and Bishop John Reid and Bishop Don Cameron, and there were others who were more or less his contemporaries that he knew so well, and who worked with him for the many times he visited Australia during the year of those former church leaders.
Mm.
And so he was very interested to know how Ken Short and Marcus and Don Robinson and John Reid and Don Cameron were getting on. So I was able to bring him some news in that way. So that was a great privilege and a delight just to have that opportunity to see him.
Yes. Paul, just finally, what do you think his life would say to both people in Christian faith and ministry now and those who are today spectators to the Christian faith?
Well, I think the balance reflected in his views that on the one hand he was a son of the Reformation, his writing about the cross of Christ and his letter to the Galatians indicates his deep commitment to the influence of the great reformers, so that he is a four square, as it were, son of the Reformation. And yet he's not in any way what we might call a narrow dogmatician. He's a man who's rooted in the Bible. It's the Bible, the teaching of the Bible, that is front and centre of all that he says. And yet at the same time, he has this profound commitment to the world. And in many ways, of course, he is in that way like the master he served,
yes.
Jesus Christ, who was at the same time so committed to the work of redemption and also to the good of people everywhere. So John represents a great model of that, shall we say, holistic biblical view. And he was, of course, a consummate and disciplined expositor of that message.
Yes.
In a way that was a remarkable articulation of a fine mind expressed graciously and yet very eloquently and persuasively. So that's a great legacy to leave behind.
Indeed. Paul Bennett, I'm so glad you've joined us on Open House tonight. Thank you so much
for
your time.
Thank you very much, Lee. It's a pleasure. Bye-bye.
We hope you enjoyed this Open House podcast. Thanks to Christian Super and Real World Technology Solutions. To hear more from Open House, visit openhousecommunity.com.au.